morning. It's Monday, March 5th. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with guest co-host Roger Goldman, who's filling in for Doug Wells, who's on assignment this morning. Roger, thanks for being here.
Good morning. We have a slightly slushy Sweet Alley this morning. Not quite as much snow as we had hoped for, but still enough for today to be, look what looks like to me, a perfect bluebird day out there.
Yeah, the sun's coming out. We are seeing patches of blue sky. It looks like a pretty day. I see people coming down the runs right now. They must be skiing out because lifts wouldn't be open yet, would they?
The lifts have been open for about 7 minutes.
Well, there you go.
And the early birds look like they're out catching the powder worms this morning.
How late did the Oscars go last night?
They went pretty late. I am a huge movie fan, but I was only reluctantly talked into watching the Oscars by my wife, and I am very grateful to her for doing that because it was a really interesting show last night. There were some really fun things that happened. BuzzFeed, by the way, this morning has in their own remarkable, witty way, has a wonderful set of 39 of the best Oscar tweets. One of which is visual, which is has a picture of Meryl Streep in her outfit and compares her to the fairy godmother in Shrek, and it's fabulous.
Oh, that sounds cruel.
But
I love Meryl Streep. Who doesn't love Meryl Streep? She might not be a fashion icon, but
everyone loves Meryl Streep, and she is a fashion icon. Speaking of fashion icons, a couple other remarkable things from last night. Rita Moreno, who starred in West Side Story in 1963, showed up wearing the same dress that she wore in the 1963 Oscars and rocked it.
Wow.
Eva Marie Saint showed up at the age of, I think, 93 and also rocked it. So there were some really remarkable appearances last night. Some of the other tweets I enjoyed was somebody said, you know, my goal in life is to be the who is she in the in memoriam section on the Oscars when they roll the names. Another suggested tweet for the in memoriam section was the director of Argo. The suggestion that his film career has his remarkable film career is over in the in memoriam section. There were lots of fun observations. So.
And I heard Frances McDormand gave a great speech.
Frances McDormand gave a significant speech. She stood there. She took the statuette and she put it down. She asked every female who had been nominated for anything that night to stand up. And she said, going forward, you need something called an inclusion rider in your contract, which was designed to really sort of force the industry to take on the need to include other voices. And while this was a great night for women and minorities, her determination is to try to make this progress go further and put it in the contract.
Oh, wow.
Remarkable.
Oh, so. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the recap. I missed the show last night, so it's good to know the highlights. And here are the highlights coming up the next hour. We've got a great guest lineup. As usual on Mountain Money, we're going to kick off our hour with Matthew Pollard. He's the author of The Introvert's Edge, How the Quiet and Shy Can Outsell Anyone. He provides a framework to guide and empower introverts to develop their own system for selling their unique business with confidence, authenticity, and results. And then next, we will have some folks from the Utah State Tax Commission. This is important for our listeners. There's a new scam going on out there that targets the tax preparers to get your information. And you may get a phone call with what sounds like a legitimate question, but it's not. Stay tuned. We will talk to them probably about 9:40 this hour. And then finally, we end our hour with Jonathan Badger. He's the president and CEO of Lee's Marketplace. Lee's has been on Heber's Main Street now for about a year and a half. We're going to check in with him and see how they're doing. All of that is coming up on Mountain Money right after these messages.
I'm Mike Kirby with Big D Construction, proudly supporting the Morning Marketplace report on KPCW. Big D is on a mission to be the most sought-after construction company in the business. More information about Big D's commitment to our customers and employees can be found at big-d.com.
Support for KPCW comes from Park City Institute.
Experience the high-flying energy of a dance troupe the New York Times called impossibly complex when Park City Institute presents Trinity Irish Dance Company, Saturday, March 10th. The evening of precision choreography and powerful movement begins at 7:30. Tickets start at $29. Call the box office at 655-3114. Park City Institute is a nonprofit organization entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998.
Good morning. Our first guest this morning is Matthew Pollard. As I think will be immediately evident when you hear his voice, he hails originally from Australia. He has transformed over 3,500 struggling businesses into success stories. Known as the Rapid Growth Guy, he's worked with solopreneurs and startups to enterprises such as Microsoft and Capital One. He's going to talk to us a little bit about his book, The Introvert's Edge, and how it is that the quiet and shy can outsell anyone. Good morning, Mr. Pollard.
Good morning, mate. Very happy to be here.
I think one of the sort of cores of the book is to sort of try to put to rest what you believe is a myth, that only extroverts can be successful salespeople. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, definitely. And I have to say, I fell victim to the myth myself when I first started in sales. I mean, I was, growing up, I was an introverted kid, reading speed of a sixth grader, had horrible acne, and really only fell into sales when I was laid off just before Christmas. And in Australia, we have, Christmas and summer at the same time, so we take about a month off. Really, the only job you can get is commission on sales. So I had that same problem. I thought that you had to have this so-called gift as a gab to be successful in sales. And it was only when I was thrown on a street with no sales experience and a little bit of product training, and I had to figure out what to say, that I really found myself in that sales situation. And I think a lot of people, especially introverts, tend to run away at that point. Well, it was 93 doors before my first sale, and I remember having this massive excitement at that stage. I'd made about $70, but then I had that realization about 45 seconds later, I got to do this every day for the rest of the year. So for me, if I had have agreed with that myth, then it would have been a horrible year for me. I couldn't exactly go back to my father, who was breaking his back 80 hours a week, and say, sorry, I've decided after day one it's too hard. So I had to agree that for me, for the year not to suck, the year had to be focused on making sales a system. So I went to work on learning that system. And I have to say, there's a lot of things in the sales process that, a lot of extroverts will teach us, like bulldog techniques and hard closing, that just didn't resonate with me. But what I agreed to do was follow this step-by-step process that naturally progressed into a sale. And what I found was actually not only can introverts make great salespeople, armed with a system, an introvert will outsell an extroverted salesperson, hands down.
If you don't mind, let's take a step back. What is your definition of an introvert?
I think there's 1,000 studies. I mean, we've been researching this for decades, and there's lots of different answers to that. The one that really drew me was where you draw your energy. I run a festival in America. It's listed by Inc. It's the number 3 festival in America for small business. It's called Small Business Festival. And the real telltale sign of an introvert versus an extrovert was the example of what happened after that event. Jim Cathcart, the number 1 speaker in the world, at least the number 1 most award-winning speaker in the world, also the author of a book called The Relationship Selling, he was the closing keynote at this event. So he and I had been around the event, and we both spoke from stage that day. And at the end of that day, I was exhausted. I wanted to go into a dark room with the TV on and just completely tune out. That's how I was going to recharge. Him, on the other hand, was supercharged from the event and wanted to go and enjoy the live music capital of the world in Austin and really go down and see a load of live music. That's really the major qualifier. So a lot of people talk about, am I an extrovert? Am I an introvert? How do I actually know? The real answer to me is, where do you recharge? Where do you draw your energy? And if it's being at home by yourself, even if you might be calling yourself these days a recovering introvert or an ambivert, a lot of times I find that introverts that actually can enjoy networking and can be great at networking, presenting, and at selling, but they still want to go home and recharge. So I think that's the best definition for everybody.
So you talk about the difference being how they recharge themselves, but there's also a difference in how they expend that energy when they are with people, and a reason why introverts need a more defined system?
Well, what you'll find is introverts, it takes a huge amount of energy to do things off the cuff. And that's one of the things in sales that introverts just should never do. So we all look at these extroverted people and the way they sell. And this is why I always say you should never learn how to public speak by being taught by an extrovert. Brian Smith got hired. He's the founder of billion-dollar brand Ugg Boots, and he hired all these great speech coaches. They were all extroverts. It didn't work for him. It was only when he learned from an introvert that he started to succeed. And the same thing with sales. When you learn from an extrovert, what you really getting is these, just do it this way, or you'll find it easy, just develop rapport. Well, introverts can't do that. It takes a huge amount of energy, and we're inward thinkers. So we have to plan what we have to say. We have to have a process. And then it doesn't take as much out of us. But yeah, of course, in a sales event, it's still going to toll on us much more than an extrovert. But following a system, at least we don't hold ourselves personally accountable if the sale goes wrong or if it doesn't close. We look at the system itself, and just like any system, we look to improve the process.
So it's the creation of a structure around the sales process that you think gives the introvert the ability to both succeed and, more important, to repeat.
That's exactly it. So if you look at the way an extrovert sells, a lot of their success in sales is based on their mood. So if they've just made a sale, and you know, a lot of sales trainers talk about this, the best person to go and send into the next sale is a salesperson that just made a sale, because an extrovert that's excited about just making some money is more likely to close the next deal. But parallel that with them going into a sale after just having a fight with their boss or having a really negative phone call with a customer or a fight with their spouse, next thing you know, their sales plummet. And I've seen extroverted salespeople that have had troughs in their sales process for weeks or months on end because there are things going on at home, family members sick. While an introvert, they really struggle with the sales process up front because they really don't do anything well off the cuff. But armed with a system, it becomes a repeatable process. So regardless of whether they're sick or whether they've just had a bad experience or whether they had the best day of their lives, they still deliver that same repeatable process. And just like any process, while on the occasional day an extrovert might beat an introvert, over the long term, a repeatable process is always going to deliver better results, and not only better results that your sales manager can really count on.
We want to go a little bit into sort of the steps in the system, but it's really an interesting perspective that you're giving us, which is that because extroverts can be successful at winging it, they have a tendency not to develop the same set of disciplines that allows them to be repeatable. And therefore, you would expect that their results, while often positive, may be more erratic because they have the confidence to think that they can always wing it. Whereas by developing these systems, we increase repeatability and predictability by the introvert.
But a question on that. By repeating a system, how do you do that without sounding like a robot?
Well, the best way that I can give you an example for that is think back to your favorite movie. If you were watching your favorite actor portray a part, it sounds so authentic and so congruent to that person. But originally, that came from a planned process, right? It came from the script.
Uh-huh.
So the difference is, we all have heard those telemarketers that sound like robots on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is they've got the script and they're reading it like a script. That's not the answer to successful sales, and especially for a lot of introverts that focus on being congruent and authentic in everything that they say, that just doesn't work. So the difference is they have to look at it and say, okay, so the goal is to create a sales process. The goal is to plan out what I'm going to say. But then I have to learn it just like an actor does. I have to embrace it. I have to become that person. The difference is that it's much easier for the person, especially if it's a small business owner, because the stories are their stories. The elements of the question are about leading people to the stories that they know they want to tell. The difference is that they don't have to come up with these. I mean, the best example I can give you is for anyone that has a girlfriend, a fiance, a husband or a wife, anyone in that situation, you think about the first time you told the story of how you met your spouse. And a lot of times that story is quite long, and there are parts of the story where people kind of get bored and other parts of the story where people really get excited. So as you start to tell that story more and more, you start to embellish on the things that people enjoy most. You start to gloss over the boring parts of the story. And all of a sudden, many years later, it becomes this theatrical masterpiece of the two of you telling this story. Yet, isn't that the same as a scripted process? It's like you've created this step-by-step process of telling a story of how you met your partner. And it's exactly the same in sales. I will tell stories when I'm selling that literally lead people through the way a customer just like them had the similar objection or had a similar problem and how they got this specific outcome. Now, it's a true story, so therefore I can deliver it authentically, and I've turned it into this masterpiece that delivers predictable results.
And you talk about niche marketing and finding your unique brand being important. How does that play a significant role?
So one of the things that really I found as hugely important is that for introverts, well, for all businesses, really, one of the biggest problems that we have is getting taken out of that commodity box and not having to feel like we're constantly competing on price. So one of the big factors that I find in the sales process is that while I can really help somebody learn a step-by-step process to deliver a higher number of sales on a daily basis, if they don't start from behind, i.e., they have a unified message that separates them from everybody else, so they're not seen as a commodity. So when they tell people what they do at a networking event, instead of somebody saying, oh, I've already had a business coach, or I've already worked with a graphic designer, and or I'm pretty under control, and I feel like I'm shoving something down somebody's throat, instead, if I lead with a unified message like I'm the rapid growth guy or I'm the authority architect, people are like, well, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. What exactly is that? Now I get to tell people on their invitation. By focusing on a niche, I can then say I specialize with a specific group of people. So for a lot of people going into business for the first time, they think I'll take any customer at all because I need clients. So I keep my message broad. The problem with that is when you first start out, you have no testimonials, no proof that what you do works well, and you have no speciality. And you're competing with people that generally have better economies of scale, better referrals, and cheaper prices, and a lot of times, a huge numbers of testimonials. So what you really want to do is focus on a refined group of people first. And then as you start to make more sales, spread that out. And that way, when you're selling to a customer, you know, you've got a strong message that resonates with them. You then are speaking directly to them, and you understand the customer better than they understand themselves, because that's the group you're always speaking to. And as a result of that, the sales process becomes so easy, because you'll sit down with a customer. And, you know, in my last business, we had a nationally accredited educational facility. We had nearly 3,500 clients, but it started with working with just people on a plumbing, or on a trade site, so a building site. And we worked, I remember we focused predominantly with plumbers. And I'd sit down with a plumber and I'd say, so what are the major problems you're experiencing in a business, in your business right now? And they would respond with, well, I don't really have any problems in my business. And I'd say, really, because the last 600 plumbers that I've seen this year have this problem, and this problem. Are you sure you don't have any of those? And they respond, well, actually, if the other people are telling you that, yes, I have these problems, but I'm also having all of these problems too. So the sales process becomes so much easier because they see that I understand their situation, and then they're then more giving with information that makes the sales process easier.
This seems to tie into what I think you've labeled as step one in your process, which is establishing trust. And given the inherent skepticism that many people have when dealing with a salesman, what techniques do you advise to get over that initial hump? How do I get my potential customer to trust me?
Well, let's talk about why introverts struggle to develop trust. Generally, extroverts will come in and they've got those charismatic personalities that just naturally develop a rapport with the customer. Now, this is, you know, based on a surface-level rapport. But introverts really struggle to drive that. They want to go in and they want to ask quick questions, and then they want to get into the functional elements of what they do. The problem is that a person doesn't feel like they have a relationship with an introvert because of that. So with an introvert, what they really need to do is learn how to develop rapport in a systemizable way. And that's why it's not... the strategies I give are not walk into a room and notice something and then come up with something, you know, quick to say about what they see in the office, because that doesn't work for an introvert. You have to have a real structure for how you develop rapport in a successful way. But the real way, going further steps down the process, is by using story. See, one of the things that most people, and I've seen bulldog salespeople, I'm talking salespeople that get hyped up on coffee. Actually, one client that I worked with actually had a salesperson that happily called himself the bulldog. Got hyped up on coffee, you know, fists against the table, yelling at the phone. Every sale is a battle to be won. And when I told him to utilize story, because, you know, there were a lot of introverts in that team and they asked me to train the entire corporation. When I worked with them, he said, Matt, they give me 8 seconds on the phone before they hang up. And I'd be lucky to get that 8 seconds. And I said, well, here's the thing. If you tell a story, you're speaking to a different part of the brain. Now, studies out of Princeton have proven that when you tell a story, you create this, what's called a natural resonance between the teller and the receiver of the story. Very similar to, you know, hundreds of years ago when a new person would come into town and they would tell stories of the journeys that they had. We've been programmed to hear stories and develop a relationship with somebody. So an introvert powered with story has this ability to create this natural rapport with someone. Secondly, one of the things that really hurts an extrovert is the fact that when they develop this trust through this charismatic personality, the next day the person wakes up and they've forgotten about the personality. They're trying to remember the details of why they bought, and now they're thinking about canceling because they can't remember it well. Details embedded into a story, studies have proven that people remember up to 22 times more information when embedded into a story. So because of that, if I was to tell, and I can, you know, prove this by saying, if I was to tell you to remember porridge, beds, and chairs, a year later I'm going to ask you what those three items are and what order that which they were told in, you'd have no clue. I mean, I wouldn't probably remember it next week. But if I told you the old children's tale of Goldilocks and Goldilocks and Three Bears, and the fact that she ate porridge, she broke the chairs, and she slept in some beds, you would not only remember those three items, you would remember them for decades later, and you'd be able to tell me the order they were told in. So those are the two key elements that really help you, you know, develop trust, because A, they've created that natural resonance, but B, they remember some major details. But there's one key variable that's even bigger than that, which is when you tell a story, you're speaking to the emotional mind, and you've actually short-circuited the logical mind. So when you're talking to the logical mind, that's the mind that says, yeah, I've heard that detail, don't think it'll apply to me. Well, how much is it anyway? But on the emotional side, when I've short-circuited the logical mind and I tell you this story, people will just listen to the entire story. And I've seen stories in hardcore cold calling last up to 2.5 minutes when somebody would normally, in a logical mind perspective, give you 8 seconds. And they just listen through the entire story. The emotional mind accepts all the variables as true. Otherwise, the first thing you would say is, hang on a second, bears don't have beds. They don't eat porridge. And then when you get to the end, they just work out the moral of the story, which is this person had the same problem you did. They've had this experience, and now they're happy. And you can't disagree with that experience because that was somebody's real life experience. So you just choose whether that fits you. And then because of that, you're much more likely to accept it as fact and just move forward. So that's the real keys to developing trust that introverts are absolute masters at.
You're listening to Matthew Pollard. He's the author of Introvert's Edge, which empowers introverts to recognize and leverage their innate strengths and abilities. Is your book better for someone who is a salesperson within a large organization, or is it better for a new business owner who wants to sell their story? Who's the right audience for this book?
That's a really great question. So obviously this book will work for any introverted person, and obviously I wrote it so that anybody that wanted to move into sales could really learn how to master this system. I find a lot of introverts know that a lot of salespeople make great money, but are too scared to move into that because they feel they don't have the gift of the gab. So yes, this book will totally help salespeople. And as a matter of fact, it's just had, as of tomorrow, a review coming out in Selling Power magazine and Top Sales World magazine to speak about the book. And it's positively reviewed it from enterprise level sales. However, I actually wrote the book specifically to help small business owners. And the reason for that is one of the biggest drivers for why I created Small Business Festival, why I'm known as the Rapid Growth Guy, is my mission in life is to help small business owners succeed in what they do. I remember growing up and seeing, you know, two family members go into business together to start this wonderful, prosperous business where they had these dreams of succeeding and having a business that revolved around them, their family, and their life, and not the other way around, or a business that really allowed them to do what they love and make a great six-figure income doing it. And then 6 months to 12 months later, you'd watch the business close and the family split up because of the financial pressure that it put on them. And I just made this decision that is what I've always wanted to do, is help people achieve that. So while I've been responsible for 5 multi-million-dollar success stories, but actually the thing I love most is to help other small businesses learn how to separate themselves so they don't have to compete on price, discover a niche of willing to buy clients, and then understand that they can actually sell and utilize a sales process where they don't have to feel like a bulldog salesperson. So I wrote the book with actually the archetype in mind of a tradesperson. There's a specific person that I've always had in my mind, and it was somebody that, you know, cleans slate for a living. And it's a person that I've known for a long time, and it's a person that's very close-minded about marketing and sales because they felt like that would force them to be something they're not. So the whole book was really written to really captivate the mindset of a small business owner that really just wanted to create a business that revolved around their family and their life and allowed them to be successful doing so. And that's why the book really tells just stories, because the reason I find a lot of people, when they think about sales as an introvert, the whole focus on that is really quite daunting. So I wanted the book to be written in a way that, you know, people would share the real-life stories of other people like them, some people with chronic stutters that perhaps struggle a little bit more than them, live those journeys with these people, and then see them transform their lives by learning the sales process, know it's possible for them, and really enjoy these stories. So it's written more like a novel where hopefully, and from what I've been told, it's working. You know, you laugh out loud a little bit, get excited by the stories, enjoy them, and just really enjoy the process of reading it, but also discover that it's possible for you too.
We're just about out of time, but I can't imagine us going through closing without talking about closing. So let's talk a little bit about the sales techniques for introverts surrounding the closing process, which for anybody who's ever been involved in sales, that is often the trickiest part of the game.
So the easiest way to close is not to ask for the sale. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but a sales process done poorly needs to have this big, awkward, do you want to move forward at the end? If you do it right, the question should never even have to come up. See, people love to buy, they hate being sold to. So as part of the sales process, one of the things that I always talk about is if you've asked great questions, you know where the pain is. Now, obviously, if you have a great understanding of the message that resonates with them and understanding of the niche, the customer variability is going to be very small. So once you get to the sales process, you ask these great questions, the stories that you tell should absolutely resonate with them. And because of that, when you ask an innocuous question, and closing doesn't work, and a lot of the strategies within these books won't work in isolation, they work together. So what I always suggest before you get to closing, you've got to do what's called a trial close. Now, a trial close is something innocuous, like asking, you're telling this story and say, I just want to double check, would you be more interested in doing a day or a night course? And the customer will say, oh, probably a day course, in which case you then move into a closing. If they say, oh, whoa, I'm not willing to make a decision right now, you can then respond with, oh, no, I wasn't actually asking you to move forward. I just needed to know so that I can better explain the next part of the process. Now they feel awkward, and I know I've got to go back and do some more homework, ask some more questions, tell some more stories. But now I've avoided all of that awkward circumstance. Now, if they tell me it's a day course, I then go into the details and explain a little bit more about the pricing, and then I'll say, now, in order to make sure you qualify for this, I just need to make sure that you have a driver's license. And, of course, people are going to have a driver's license, or they're going to have a business trading number, like an EIN number or a social security number for a personal. And I'll say, great, would you mind going to grab that for me? They'll jump up to go and grab it, and I'll just have the paperwork out when they get back, and I'll be filling it out. 9 times out of 10, a person will say, they'll just hand you their ABN number or their EIN number or their driver's license and want to and let you continue. The 1 time out of 10 that they don't, they'll say, oh, I'm not willing to move forward just yet. You say, oh, no, that's fine. I'm just putting everything down because one of the things that I'm really focused on is making sure I don't promise anything that I don't deliver. So I just like to put all this detail down on the page so that way, you know, once you've decided to make the decision or once you go away and think about it, you also have all the paperwork to look through to make sure that you're congruent with the decision to move forward. And again, that then takes all the awkwardness out. But 9 times out of 10, they'll just continue with the process and you walk out on the day with the paperwork. And I've done this with 5-figure training contracts with corporations that generally take 3 months to organize a decision. And I've walked out with the sale on the day by just doing this. And one of the things I'm really focused on is these strategies are not something you have to buy the book for. I really want to make sure that every introvert knows that a sales system is possible for them. And that's why on my website, theintrovertsedge.com, you'll actually have the ability to download the first chapter. And if you do nothing more than just download that first chapter, write down the steps and translate your current sales process into that, delete the stuff that doesn't work or that doesn't fit, and then fill in the gaps, you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. I mean, obviously, I'd love it if you bought the book, but it's not a necessity. I just want to see people understand that it's a process that they can actually master themselves.
Well, wonderful advice from Matthew Pollard. We need to close it there, I'm sorry to say. Thank you for your time this morning.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. That was Matthew Pollard, author of The Introvert's Edge, How the Quiet and Shy Can Outsell Anyone. He just gave you the website, theintrovertsedge.com. Really interesting conversation. And coming up next, there's a tax scam going on that could put your personal information at risk. We'll talk about how to protect yourself right after these messages.
I'm Ryan Karchner, Director of Golf of the Promontory Club and KPCW sponsor. Members of the private Promontory community are offered two 18-hole golf courses with clubhouse amenities. Social events at Promontory provide members with year-round calendar of events with opportunities to support the community we love. Custom homes, home sites, and information about golf and more can be found at promontoryclub.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Holiday, bike buyer for Jan's, supporting KPCW. Jan's Bike Shop is open year-round for sales and service. We offer bikes from Trek, Scott, and Santa Cruz. Bike apparel from Gore, Bontrager, and Club Ride. Available at our flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or jans.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley-Miller here with our guest co-host, Roger Goldman. And our next guests are from the Utah State Tax Commission. There is a new scam going around that targets tax preparers to get your personal information. And joining us on the phone this morning are Charlie Roberts and Amy Arne. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee. Good morning. And Roger.
Good morning.
So, Charlie, I know you from the news days. You handle
right.
all public information from the State Tax Commission. And Amy, our producer, says you're into scams.
Yes, I am.
What's your official title at the Tax Commission?
I'm the Tax Commission Compliance Manager for the Suspicious Filer Group.
And what is this new scam that's going around?
Well, the newest scam was identified by the IRS and relayed to us. What's going on is they are hackers or your fraudsters, wish we knew where they were. They're basically breaching your preparers information. So they're hacking into your preparer, whoever that may be, your CPA, whoever's preparing your tax return. They're breaking into their system, stealing your information, and then turning around and filing a fraudulent return under your name and information. And
that's a little scary because I don't have control over my tax preparer's computer system.
Exactly. Correct. That's right.
So how do we protect ourselves?
Well, that's the tricky part. You have to, you're putting your faith in your preparer, whoever that is. If it's your CPA, you're hoping that he has a good IT person.
I guess that would give rise to two questions in my mind. The first question is from the state's perspective. Is the state doing anything to speak to tax preparers in the state of Utah about the quality of the firewalls and other protections that they should be implementing given this scam?
Yes, we do that all the time. And, you know, Roger, with technology changing as it is, it's really difficult to keep up. And it's even more difficult to keep up with the crooks.
Yeah, exactly.
So we are with our training and constant communication with the tax preparers and that entire community, we're always doing that.
And I guess the flip side of that, which goes to Renee's question, is are there questions that we should be asking as consumers of our tax preparers? Should we be saying, what are you doing to ensure that your firewalls and other anti-hacking protections are state-of-the-art and can't be invaded by scammers or evil Russian bots?
Right, and that we should do every year. Even if you've been using the same preparer for all these years, it's important that they keep up with their system. And it's a good question to ask before you sign on the dotted line.
And then, Amy, I think I cut you off on your story as you're explaining the scam. So the hackers get into my tax preparer's system. They get my personal information, and they fill out a tax reform under my name. How do I realize that has happened?
So the twist on Just to Prepare being breached, this new one that's come out, is instead of it going your so this fraudulent refund that's in your name, normally in the past what they've done is it'll go to like a prepaid debit card or something that's untraceable. The difference this time is what they're doing is they're having it go to your real bank account. Oh. Because they have that information because they stole it from your preparer. So they'll have it go to your bank account, and then a few days after it's deposited into your bank account, you will receive a phone call from somebody pretending to be your bank or a collection agent saying that that was fraudulently put into your account, and they're giving you steps on how to get that out of your account. So that's really the fraudster calling you, saying, trying to get their money to them.
That's pretty brazen. So we should be,
it
should be a red flag for anybody calling me to say, take money out of your bank account and return it.
And right. You know, most banks aren't going to do that, right? If a bank notices a deposit into your account fraudulently, they'll take care of it on the back end. But people aren't going to know that. And if you look into your bank account, you'll see, wow, they're right. There is a deposit. What we're telling people to do is hang up. If somebody's trying to get you to do something from your account and transfer it, hang up and call your bank directly. Don't listen to the steps that they're trying to tell you. Call your bank directly, and they will help you from there. If it is a tax refund, you'll need to contact us because you will need to return that money to us. Otherwise, debt in your name.
You know, this leads
to... Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand that neither the IRS or the tax commission is going to call you and ask for information. We have your information. We've got down to your shoe size. We've got all the information we need. But what, unfortunately, these people are very convincing. Sometimes they're Mr. Nice Guy. Other times they're very demanding and threatening, and the police are going to come and get you. And as bizarre as that sounds, as we're talking casually about this, it happens, and they're good. They'll prey on the elderly. They'll prey on those who have English as a second language. Hmm. They prey on those with lower incomes. So, you know, people can get nervous in a hurry. We've heard stories of a number of really good, sharp people that get frauded because they're so convincing with this. So as Amy was saying, the best thing you do if somebody's calling to say, hey, give us this information, give us this money, the best thing you do is hang up and contact your local financial institution.
And, of course, this scam is in addition to the one that we've seen consistently over the last few years, where you'll get a phone call often from someone purporting to be the IRS and warning you that you're subject to a criminal investigation if you don't do X, Y, and Z. Interestingly enough, I know I've had sophisticated friends who have called me and said, hey, I've got this big problem with the IRS. And the answer is, no, they don't leave voicemails like that. Can you talk a little bit about that scam, which I think has been very common?
Well, believe it or not, our commission chair, the one appointed by the governor over the tax commission, he got one, I'm going to say, it's been within the last 2 weeks. And I just happened to be standing there, and he put it on speakerphone, and he talked to him, and he says, yeah, you need to do this. The police are coming. And he goes, oh, well, this is the tax commission. And that guy hung up in a hurry. I mean, it's just bizarre. But the other thing
can you just flesh that out a little bit? Like what the context of the call usually is? What do they usually say? Yeah.
Usually, what they say is, "You owe us money." Now, this is aside from what Amy is talking about.
Right.
You owe us money, and you need to pay us now, or else immediate criminal action is going to be taken. And that's their standard line, and then they branch off and do different things from that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I cut you off before. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. It's just really important. One of the things they'll do that's relatively new is they'll get a caller ID number, and it'll look like, for example, a 202 number out of Washington, D.C. It's not out of Washington, D.C. More than likely, it's offshore. And the other thing is they used to be able to identify them fairly easy because they had heavy, strong accents.
Mm-hmm.
No more. I mean, they're there still, but it'll sound like, the cop down the street.
Has there been any success at enforcement on these kinds of scams? I mean, I realize they're offshore and they're probably hard to get to.
Unfortunately, they're very difficult to get to because, like I said earlier, it's really tough to keep up with the crooks. And so the best thing we can do is arm the public with this information so they've got the radar up when they receive those type of calls.
Yeah. One time, Charlie, I got a text message from someone saying, please call the IRS, you're under investigation. Fortunately, I knew that the IRS probably doesn't use text to reach people who are under investigation.
Or voicemails.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Never is a big word, but you're never going to get a text from the IRS or the tax commission saying, send us your money. It'll never happen.
Now, what happens if I fall for this? And I go to my bank and I withdraw the money and I send it to Mr. Fraud Guy. And then I find out later I've been scammed. What process do I follow then? Do I follow up with the bank and try to get the money back that way? Do I call you guys? How does that work?
You can. And I can't speak for the IRS, but for us here, we'll treat you fairly. So, you know, you receive your full amount. And if that means, you know, we have to chase these guys down and hopefully get some, or it hits our bottom line, that's okay. But you'll be treated fairly by the tax commission.
And what kind of paper trail or evidence do I need to provide the Utah State Tax Commission for that? I mean, it's hard to keep a record of a phone call.
Right. These are individual. Contact your police, for starters.
Okay. Well,
we would require a police report on something like that, and the IRS has a form that's an identity theft affidavit, so we usually request that you turn that into us along with your police report.
Good to know. Charlie Roberts and Amy Arn, anything else you want our listeners to know before we wrap up?
The sooner you file, the better off you are.
Aha.
You get more protection when you file earlier.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So all those procrastinators out there, take note. Get to work.
Right. Yeah, stay ahead of the fraudsters.
Okay, Charlie Roberts and Amy Arn with the Utah State Tax Commission. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mount Money will be right back. We're going to have Jonathan Badger, the president and CEO of Lee's Marketplace, on the phone with us. Lee's took over Day's Market on Heber's Main Street. They've been in business about a year and a half. We'll hear from him about how it's going right after this.
Being a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
This is Matt Mitten, attorney with Jones Waldo, a Park City law firm. Longtime supporters of KPCW, our firm provides estate planning and other personal legal services to residents of Summit County and beyond. We are online at joneswaldo.com and 435-200-0085.
Hi, this is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We proudly support KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have been supporting the local community and providing real estate services since 1976. All current and active listings can be found on our website at bhhsutah.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW. We are a service-oriented community bank offering options for your personal or business needs. We're next to the movie theaters on Kearns Boulevard, 649-3369, or at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. And yes, we still have cookies on Friday.
This is Mountain Money on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley-Miller here with my guest co-host, Roger Goldman. And joining us on the phone this morning, we are very happy to have Jonathan Badger, president and CEO of Lee's Marketplace, on the phone with us. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We are doing well. And in fact, during that break, our producer, Bob Hendricks, was, I think, blaming you for about 5 pounds of bakery goods. He said you have a really good bakery at Lee's.
Well, we will take that blame. We appreciate that. Tell him thanks.
Now, you've been on Heber's Main Street now about a year and a half. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
And how's business?
Business is great. Heber residents are fantastic. The Wasatch County has treated us really well.
And you guys, in addition to having a great bakery, you have a lot of local items in your marketplace. Is that right?
We do, yeah. We subscribe to the Utah's own local products, as well as anything we can get from Heber Valley cheese to all the things that are available there in the Wasatch County as well.
And is that a philosophy that Lee's Marketplace has embraced from the start when you guys began back in 1980?
Yeah, in fact, my father, Lee, where the store is named after Lee, is the founder of this company in 1981 in Smithfield, Utah. And the first thing he did is run out to the local high school and say, what can we do to help you? And so we've always been local. We've tried to do all we can to make sure our neighbors want to shop our store, that we can provide what they need in the areas that we have. So local is something we live for.
My understanding is that the grocery business is very competitive with very tight margins. So what philosophy or what strategies do you use to compete with the big chain stores?
I appreciate that. It is a very, very competitive industry, and the tight margins are true as well. The strategies that we have at our store, we believe that we want to be the neighborhood store. We want you to feel comfortable coming into the store. We're not going to insult you with our pricing or anything like that. We're going to provide the service that you desire. So many things are going online now. We've even have an online service, but we make sure it's our people delivering your groceries to your home to make sure that we cover the service aspect of our own business, not put it out to a third party that we don't know what they're saying or what they're doing. And so we train our people to do that on those sides so we can compete in an online world as well as in a bricks and mortar world. And I think that the main philosophy we have is if we give you the service, then you'll want to come back to the store. Obviously, our quality, our products, as your producer knows in our bakery and other stores from our deli department to our produce, we make sure it's top quality. We have a quality statement that says if you wouldn't sell it to your family, don't sell it to our guests that come in the store. And so we want to make sure that they have a good experience as they walk into the store.
Talk a little bit about the online service and how that works, please.
Sure. You go on to our website at leesmarketplace.com, go shop online, just sign up as your address, who you are, what you do, and then you go through and pick your groceries. Everything's available on the online store as it is in the store. It's about a four-hour window that we're able to deliver within, and so we have you put it in at 11, we could deliver it by 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And so we're able to get our deliveries out there. You could also pick it up at the store. If, mom's at home and wants to order it, her husband wants to swing by the store on the way home to just pick it up, we could do that as well. And so there's a small fee, a $1.99 fee for pickup, and it's $5 to $10 for delivery depending on the distance.
I've always been curious about the demographic using online grocery shopping and delivery. Are there people who are using it for their elderly parents and they want to have groceries delivered to them? Someone who maybe is unable to get out of the house, maybe they're recovering from knee surgery or something? Or is it just the busy mom who is so busy running the kids around that just to have her groceries delivered is better for her? Who's your customer for online shopping?
You know, it's all of the above, and we first got into online. The company that we work with said that, you know, you'll have busy professionals that don't have time to order or cook or do any of those things. They'll swing by and grab something. But what we're noticing is it is mobility impaired. It's definitely people that have had surgery. We've had email after email about, you've helped my, you know, recovery because I'm not able to get out, but you can deliver to me and bring it in my house and help me take care of those things. And so we've had definitely that, but the top definite demographic that we have is moms with kids. We try to provide an atmosphere that kids have fun coming into our store. We have a mascot that we hide through the store that kids have to find and they get a treat for. We have free cookies at the bakery for them as they walk in. All sorts of things that we want to do to have a friendly family environment in our stores. But, you know, probably as well as my wife would tell you that going to the store with kids is not her top priority to do. So the delivery thing definitely works with moms with kids that are busy and want to make sure they can still get healthy products for their children.
Well, then a follow-up to that, because every kid has a different preference on how ripe they want their banana to be. I know I have a preference about how ripe I want that avocado to be when I'm looking at it in the produce department. So how do you deliver on those people's expectations with online and home delivery?
So with our online, there is a note section. If you wanted to pick bananas and say, I want the greenest bananas you have, or I want to eat my banana in a couple of days, or my avocado I'm going to use on Saturday, you can leave different notes as you select the product. So if you were to go to bananas and say, I want, you know, these bananas, this many, and then you can put a note in that says, please make them green or two green and four yellow or whatever it may be. And so we are pretty specific on that. We've trained our pickers. You know, sometimes with the online world, you get scared of, oh, I want to pick my own produce, I want to pick my own meat, cut of meat, and all of those things. But we've trained our shoppers to make sure that they pick the best quality. They make sure they read the notes. They have phone calls. We call the customer and say, you know, hey, we may not have this one. Are you okay if I move to this one? It's a really good product, whatever it may be. And so we do have that communication with our guest as well, and we provide the best quality we can to online, well, to all of our shoppers, but online especially. We want to make sure that they don't disappoint, they aren't disappointed with the quality we give them.
You make the online option sound so enticing. I think I have to ask whether or not you will either now or in the future deliver as far as Park City.
We have delivered to Park City. It's a little bit more money to get up there, a little bit further that way. But no, we're happy to deliver. We really like to work with the condominiums and things as well, that, you know, some of the managers there that have people coming for a week, that we can able to stock up their food before they get there and be ready to go. So you can just hit the slopes or hit the mountain or do whatever you want to do there. So, yeah, we'll deliver anywhere for a price.
We are talking to Jonathan Badger, the president and CEO of Lee's Marketplace, which is on Heber's Main Street. And you've also opened a new store in North Salt Lake. And we like letting our listeners hear the news first. Do you have any plans for a new store anywhere in the next year?
Not that I could say, but definitely we're planning to grow our company and continue to do so.
And what has been the most challenging part of growing your company?
I think with everybody right now, there's a now hiring sign in every window you drive by. And so I think as growth continues in Utah and growth continues around our industry and all the other industries, it's going to be hiring the right people, bringing in the people that want to work, that want to do a good job for you. And that, you know, we try to provide an atmosphere that flexibility and make sure that it's a good thing they want to come and work in and have an enjoyable time. One of our mission statements is we want it to be a fun and enjoyable place to work, but that's for our team and our guests, you know. So yeah, we want to make sure our guests are having an enjoyable time as they walk through the store and grocery shopping, and our team is also enjoying, at least trying to get that. As long as work's getting done and we're having fun, I think that's the goal.
Jonathan Badger, President and CEO of Lee's Marketplace, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate you being on the show. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Our newest residential project, Apex Residences, is a collection of 63 slopeside townhomes and flats located at the apex of Canyons Village at Park City Resort. Information about Apex Residences can be found online at apexparkcity.com or 435-429-APEX.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974. FredMarshallPainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I want to thank our guests, author Matthew Pollard, Charlie Roberts, and Ann Arn from the Utah Tax Commission, and Jonathan Badger from Lee's Marketplace.
And thank you to our sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Development with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. And thank you to my guest co-host, Roger Goldman. Thanks for being here this morning. and Doug Wells, and I will be back next Monday at 9 a.m. Thanks for listening to Mountain Money. You're listening to KPCW Park City, NPR News.